Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, a podcast where we talk to the most interesting people doing the most interesting things. Today, I'm joined by Neil Elliott, a creative director and brand strategist known for bringing brands to life across different media types. Neil, thank you so much for being with us here today. Could you share a little bit about yourself with the audience, your work, your backstory? What has gotten you to this point in your career?
So my backstory is probably a little bit long and winding for a short podcast, but I'll give you a sort of...
We love long and winding. That's what makes it interesting.
So I was born in a great era where I turned 18 in 1988 in time for the Acid House Revolution. And that took me on a creative journey, I suppose. I started making music, started my record label, started running nightclubs, had a lot of fun for quite a few years, didn't age, I don't think. It kept me grounded in a sort of Peter Pan type of way. After many years, though, of sort of slogging it through the record industry, I realized that I probably wasn't as talented as I thought I was and required a new line of work. So I went to university late. Wondered where I could have as much fun as the music industry as a grown-up job, decided to do advertising, design and media management at university. I always loved advertising and thought maybe the creative world was for me. Left there with a degree in design and media management and had my first job as a creative, a copywriter. And then that has taken me all around the world. Ended up, I was in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, New York, Milan, Brussels, London, working for some of the biggest agencies such as Saatchi, Gray, Ogilvy. And finally ended up running Procter & Gamble across EMEA creatively, which is Lenore, Febreze, such like. After probably 8 years of doing that, I felt like I needed to challenge myself again. I was like one of the highest paid soap salesmen in the world, I think. But I needed challenging within myself, and always had a passion for sort of craftsmanship, whether that is in creating or whether that is in ideas. You know, crafting things is all about doing the best you can with the tools you have. And British craftsmanship is always something close to my heart. Probably living through osmosis, I'm not very good with my fingers, so I'm not really a woodworker or a leather worker or what have you, but I love how people can create with their hands. So decided to set up a platform, an e-commerce platform for British craftsmanship, where I had over 100 brands, on there, from umbrellas to whistles, but all handmade in the UK. I knew nothing about e-commerce at the time. That was the challenge. I just had a sort of innate passion for British craftsmanship. Left my job. Some would say foolhardy. I would say, following my passion. Literally knew nothing about e-commerce, apart from how to buy something online. That was a huge learning curve. Going into that happened just at the time Brexit happened, and then COVID and cost of living, and e-commerce became even harder. Not only was it hard because I didn't know anything about it, all these factors sort of built up on top of me. It's just like, wow, this is some game now. So ended up getting funded. So went through funding rounds, and it's still alive. It's sort of sitting in the background a little bit now, the e-commerce, but it's still there. And I was also freelance creative directing as well, helping brands strategize where they need to go and what creative output they need to get the right target audience. And then last year, I decided that maybe I need to start my own proper brand. So I've now started to create my own brands, which is reviving old English brands, brands that have gone defunct. And I've bought the IP and the copyright, and I'm now a product designer as well, which again, I know nothing about. But I'm learning on the job, as they say. I think my journey is always about self-discovery, really. It's always about challenging myself to do things that fascinate me or interest me. And hopefully I sort of bring that to other people as well. Hopefully I can challenge people and see where they should be or where they want to be, or, you know, trying to find what actually drives them to get up in the morning.
You mentioned your work with heritage brands, and I know that market is currently in a very interesting space in terms of transforming and fitting into the sort of what's the new next thing that's happening. How have you been able to merge those two worlds?
So with the brand, I have a leather brand at the moment that I've started. And what we're doing there is that it's traditional British leather craftsmanship, but designed for a modern world. So we're making AirTag holders and things for Apple products and things for electrical products. But, you know, people spend £1,000 on their iPhone and then buy a £199 case from outside Sainsbury's. And it's like, what are you doing? This is like, you obviously cherish this product because, well, you wouldn't put that money into it. You should definitely sort of cherish the case that it protects it. So our idea is that we are making very, very beautiful leather products that enhance your tech life, essentially. So that's the sort of the married of sort of the modern world and the traditional heritage world, which I think there were a few of the bigger brands. Fendi are doing that. I mean, we're not at the level of Fendi, but, you know, Fendi has definitely got into that zone, which is great. And there are a few other brands that are trying to create this synergy between heritage and tech, which I think is a really nice place to be.
What are you excited about right now in your industry?
It depends which industry you're talking about, I suppose. I mean, I'm excited by craftsmanship being lauded again a little bit. I think even an iPhone has got craftsmanship in it. You know, they think about what the end consumer does with it, probably more than a lot of products do. And I see that as craftsmanship, because craftsmanship's all about thinking about the usage of it. So I'm excited by, craftsmanship in general being lauded, whether that's a premium product, a luxury product. I think people are really understanding how probably my grandparents thought about craftsmanship. You know, it's about, which is also about sustainability as well, craftsmanship. It's about buying something that's going to last because it's well made, instead of just buying what's the closest thing on the shelf I could grab and then throw away next week. But it might cost you more money, but you only have to buy it once. And I love that thought process, that actually buying better products is also better for the planet because there's less wastage. It might cost you £3 more, but eventually it will come back to you tenfold. Creatively, I think uncertainty is probably the biggest challenge in this world at the moment. I don't think anyone really knows where creativity is going at the moment, especially with AI. I saw a great ad the other day for the Co-op that was all done on stop frame. And it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful, but they'd done it painstakingly for real instead of just getting some sort of CGI or AI to run this animation. And you can tell and you can feel when someone's put some love into something. And I think it hits you in the heart when there is some love there. And I think a lot of the time CGI and AI, although it can do amazing things, you almost don't feel it. There's something in the brain that understands that it's not there's no love being put into it. And I'm sure some AI animators will say I put a lot of love into my AI and stuff. But yeah, it feels like a tool that's there for the easy route at the moment and not for the love.
That's a nice intersection as well of craftsmanship and creativity. Kind of this move towards seeing the craftsmanship in creativity when it's done in a more traditional way.
Absolutely. I think that's the joy, is creativity and craftsmanship together should always be together. Whether that's filmmaking, whether that's drawing, whether that's idea generation, you should have craft in the way you think. It shouldn't be, oh, that will do. I think that's the thing. And I think a lot of clients and a lot of agencies, from an advertising point of view, think that will do, because they think that the end consumer won't realize, I think. Well, actually, I think the end consumer does realize a lot of the time. They don't get emotionally hit in the heart by a lot of ideas and by a lot of thought.
Do you think that there are new opportunities that are emerging, both within creativity and sort of that craftsmanship aspect of things?
There's always opportunities. Wherever you look, there's always opportunities. I believe that craftsmanship is fundamental to doing great work, whatever that work would be. Whether you are a plumber, an electrician, someone who designs and makes chairs, or whether you're a creative. And I think the opportunity is understanding how well and how amazing the brain is and your hands together. That's the opportunity, to actually fuse those things together to create something miraculous. The brain is a miraculous thing.
Really, it really is. Even all the things it does without us knowing. What are the conversations you think people should be having right now, both in the creative space and obviously in that little intersection of craftsmanship and creativity?
I think the conversations should be, how can we do things better all the time? I think that should be the constant conversation, not how can we do things easier. I think easy is a bad word, because I think easy ends up being sloppy. To say AI is easy, you know, anyone can get on Midjourney and play around for a week and come up with some great visuals. And there are great visuals on Midjourney, and it's getting better all the time. But to me, it does feel like the easy route. And I think easy is never fun, is it, really? If it's easy, it's like you just get bored very quickly. How do you get challenged if everything's easy? If you just press a few buttons and, you know, there you go, that's done. What else is there to do? I think challenging, we should be, how do we get better? How do we challenge ourselves? How do we connect with people more, whether that's through product or ideas?
Are there any important customer trends that you've been noticing lately?
Well, through the e-commerce, data is another game that, you know, I don't think data is something we should rely on all the time. Because human emotion doesn't equate the data a lot of the time. You know, you can get data like how many times someone clicked on your website and what age they are and whatever. But, you know, you're not really talking to real people. You don't really know. They might have clicked on your website by accident, you know. The data's there saying they're on your website, but it may have been a slip of the finger. I think that data's all well and good, but still, it's still about that emotion for me, about that connection. I think through e-commerce, I think if I can say some sort of trend, I think there is a trend definitely, going back to data, through younger target audience. We've noticed through our websites, the younger target audience are actually purchasing more expensive products that are designed to last longer. We always thought our demographics would be, you know, 40s upwards, you know, financially mobile, you know, maybe even empty nesters because they like to have this heritage brand. But we've noticed that actually the 18 to 24s visit and purchase just as much as the over 45, which is a great trend because that gives me hope that actually craftsmanship is still alive and people still want it. Well, actually, it's probably come back from the mass markets of the Primarks and things of this world, coming through to people actually owning the product that they're actually proud to display.
No, I was going to say, is that you're seeing that shift away from the fast fashion of the last few years?
I think it's taken a bit of a hit battering in the last couple of years because of the cost of living crisis. People have just instantly reverted back to, I need that, but I can't afford the better version. Therefore, I will default back to, I just need it. But a couple of years before that, you could definitely see that. But I think as soon as we're now the cost of living crisis, hopefully abating a little, we will see that trend move forward, that people are buying for a lifetime instead of buying for the self-gratification moment right here, right now. You know, we don't, the sweets at the end of the aisle is not a good place to be for a brand, I don't think, unless you're selling sweets.
As a leader, what question do you think leaders should be asking themselves right now within the creative space, within the e-commerce space? What shifts do you think they should be making?
I think the only question that everyone keeps need to ask why is the question. Why? All the time. I think every meeting should be why. Why are we doing this? Because I think sometimes organizations and creative departments and brands do things without asking why they're doing it. They're just doing it because they're on some sort of treadmill that, yeah, we need to increase sales, we need to blah, 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 we need to blah, blah, blah. But I think you need to ask why 4 or 5 times in a row. You know, why are you doing this? Okay, but why is that? But then why is that? Because eventually after 4 or 5 whys, you might actually get to the real reason why you're doing things. I think just constantly asking yourself why is the main question I would say to anyone. Whether that's why are we even in business eventually? Why do we even exist? What's our purpose? I think brands, a lot of brands don't understand why they're in business, you know. And making a profit is not a reason. It's not a why. We're not here. That most companies are not there unless you've got horrible shareholders on your back saying, I want a dividend of X amount.
Again, going back to you as a leader, what makes you tick? How would you want people to describe you and how you make change happen on your best day?
Yeah, on my best day. Well, actually, I saw the other day, someone, Matt Fallows, was saying that he's found some research that says that elite athletes have 6 off days every 30, which I thought was quite interesting. And most coaches know that, like high level sports coaches. So they just let them have their off day and they don't train them. They just go accept it. So me on my 24 other days, slightly being a agent provocateur, I think, trying to get to the nub of the problem, trying to get out of people what it is we're really trying to do, and not just the superficial, here's the brief or here's the problem, right, how do we fix that problem? I think there needs to be, for me, there needs to be critical thinking at the front. And there needs to be a lot of critical thinking, but then you need to let it settle in. And then I would let people have that critical thinking settled in and then let them go and do the creative thinking. Because sometimes the brain can just mash up all these critical thinking ideas and you need to let it settle in. You can't just go straight away and think right now we'll solve the problem. Let it settle, let it ruminate in you. And then go and do your creative thinking. And I think as a leader, I'd hope my past creatives and people who have worked under me and with me would say that I am quite good at letting people be free of sort of pressure and to do their best work, I suppose.
Do you make use of a process, methodology, framework when you take on a new challenge?
I say critical thinking is great. I mean, it's like knowing all the facts and all the details. But creativity is chaos at the end of the day. That's why you need the critical thinking at the start, because generally trying to codify creativity is pretty much impossible. because the brain doesn't work in like that. The brain does. I mean, it may do for some accountants or some, I don't know, but certainly for people who have a desire to be creative, chaos is part of the process. And I've never been one for brainstorming. I think individuals or small teams should go and solve problems themselves. The problems with brainstorming, which I've always found, is that if you get a room of 10 people, there will be the loud alpha male who may not have the right problems, the right solution, sorry. And there may be a very quiet person who is actually very clever and has great insights, but they're too scared to speak up. And their ideas never get... And I've seen it in research as well. When we presented TV ads in research, if you have a room of 10 people, there is one person that will drive the conversation generally, or two people, and then everyone starts agreeing with them because they're so forceful in their opinion, even if that opinion is wrong or not, nothing's ever wrong, but if that opinion is derogatory to the idea, say, where actually you think it's actually very good for the brand, but this one person has now driven this whole conversation and everyone starts agreeing with them. So yeah, brainstorming's never been my favorite thing. So I like working with individuals or very small teams where everyone feels comfortable voicing their opinion. Whether they say there's no such thing as a stupid idea. Everyone should have the confidence to voice an opinion, even if it is slightly silly or slightly stupid, because you never know where that's going to go.
How do you make sure you get all of those voices? Is it just smaller teams and one-on-ones? What is it that really kind of brings it?
I think smaller teams. We always used to say in advertising, you know, even the receptionist, say even, but the receptionist could have a great idea. The cleaner could have a great idea. You just never know. Because at the end of the day, we are talking to normal people. That's what we're supposed to do in brands and advertising. We're talking to, as David Ogilvy says, the consumer is not stupid. It's your mum. You know, it's like, so no one should be left in the dark on where ideas come from or how to put ideas forward. So I prefer, though, to work in much smaller teams, one-to-one, give people the freedom and the opportunity to voice their opinions, their ideas, because you just never know where that idea is going to come from. And sometimes I've been in meetings where it's been quite surprising who's come up with the idea, whether it's the junior account man who's just gone, well, how about this? You go, wow, that's a great insight.
Hadn't thought about it that way.
Exactly. So yeah, you just never know. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not God's gift to creativity. You know, it's like there are far better people than me out there, but I do know how to get to good ideas, and that's generally through letting people express themselves.
That's quite an important skill as a creative, to be able to put the ego aside. How have you cultivated that through your career?
So when I was making music, I suppose the guy I was making music with was definitely the more creative musician, per se. So my role was much more on how do we become a product that a record label could take on. So my role in that was not so much the music, although I was involved in the music. I was much more about, right, shall we contact the record label? How do we present ourselves? What's our logo going to be? What are we going to be called? You know, what's the package around it? Creatively, there's a weird transition when you're in an agency from creative to creative director, and you never get trained to do that. It's like, oh, you're the most senior, best creative now. Can you now be the creative director? It's like, well, I've never trained for that. I don't know how to tell other people how to do their ideas or to nurture other people's ideas. It's always been in my head, the idea. That was a huge transition and one that took a long time for me to understand that I have to give up my creativity a little bit to try and bring their creativity out. And obviously I still have to help with the ideas and nurture them and mold them and influence them. But essentially you're giving up power. You're giving up that ownership power a little bit. which I think is a strange shift for a creative, but it's also quite an enlightening shift. It frees you up, that sort of monkey on your shoulder of you'll never, you know, as I think it was Ernest Hemingway said, called the white page, the white bull, you know, the blank page of the white bull that terrified him every time he went to write. And you sort of give up that little bit, which is partly good and partly bad, because as a creative, you want to create. But not having to face the white bull every day is quite enlightening sometimes.
So here's a I think one of those standard questions that's always very interesting. What advice would you give your younger self?
Be more pushy. The world won't come to you. You've got to go to the world. I think it's, and it's taken me a long time, and I still haven't got there. So I had a great career and I've done loads of things, but there's still stuff that I probably should be pushier about and to get my way. But that's also quite a good thing of not being too, I don't know. Yeah. Probably be more pushy. Life in general, be more pushy.
Go after it. Don't wait around for it to come to you. When you look at the industries you work in the wider world, where do you see the opportunities and ways to reinvent the way things are done within that?
Reinvent is a good word, because trying to be original is nigh on impossible. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. We've all got cultural references that we bring together, and being original is I don't even think it exists, to be honest. So to reinvent, I mean, the ad agency is going through a horrid time at the moment. From that point of view, there's a couple of agencies that are trying to reinvent it, like the Liberty Guild. But a lot of the bigger agencies are just merging, where they're forgetting about their old brand heritage. So from an advertising point of view, they haven't figured it out yet, how to reinvent themselves and how to bill and how to charge for creativity, because that's the biggest problem, is charging for creativity. You can't charge because you don't know how long an idea is going to take to come to the fore. But to reinvent an industry, I think it's happening, how I see it, is happening a lot. So there's a lot of brands that are, like manufacturing brands, that are making to order, even though there's less waste, which I think is great. So they're quick turnaround when they manufacture, but they manufacture to order. And I think that's definitely a way that a lot of brands will go. But for me to reinvent something right now, I'm not sure.
So many ways to go forward with things. I like that about, I think, being more sustainable, being more waste conscious, and sort of, again, leaning into the craftsmanship of things.
That's why I hope, that's the hope that I have, that the reinvention is that people will take more time and thought in what they're actually doing and producing. And I mean, it doesn't help with, social media, TikTok, Instagram is like bang, 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 bang. I need something new to put out today. And that doesn't help, because I think what the problem is that we're addicted to social media. Most people are, a computer taking 5 seconds to load, or an ad taking 3 seconds to load. You already turned it off. It's like, that's too long. People want instant internet now. I mean, it will come. I'm sure it will come, where you press a button, it's there. But, I think that's what we're up against, is that instant gratification that people expect nowadays, because the internet has done that, but not quite perfectly.
Even for myself, I grew up when dial-up was still a thing. And I was quite used to waiting for 5 minutes for a page to load. But now if it's 2 seconds, I get frustrated and I'm like, oh, this isn't working. And you're gone. And you've sort of lost that that interest almost immediately.
So that would be the reinvention. How do we slow down people?
That would be a fantastic reinvention.
Yeah. How do we slow down people to appreciate? Just appreciate what they've got in front of them, and just take a few more minutes. It's okay. It's all going to come. It's all right. It will be there. Just don't stress.
Fantastic. So I'm going to throw a few quick fire questions your way. The first one is, could your friend explain what you do?
Well, that would depend what friend it is, I suppose. Most of my friends would say, Neil does what he likes.
Not a bad place to be.
Not a bad place. No. I think most people would say that try and solve problems wherever I come up against them. I think that's what they say I would do.
Is that what you'd want them to say as well? Because that's the next question. How would you want them to describe what you do?
No, I think that's a good place to be. I think a lot of them would say that I also am trying to save British craftsmanship. I think a lot of them would say that, which is cool. I get dragged to other places, but yeah, one of my main passions is to try and save British craftsmanship, although it's probably too big for one man. But yeah, that's what I'd probably want them to say as well.
What is the best advice you've ever been given?
From a work point of view, I think it was a creative director I worked with who told me any person that has a reputation for coming in on time can come in at any time they want. And also, I think from another creative director, it was, give me the idea that will get you fired. Basically, what he was trying to do there was to free us up. Stop thinking what the client wants. Stop thinking what we should be doing. Which I think is great advice. It's like, give me the idea that you think you might get fired. But yeah, okay. That will let me go crazy now.
It's also interesting in terms of how that is an indicator of how advertising has changed, how it's moved from being very sort of, I think, in the box to where we are now, where there's just so many different routes to take.
Yeah, I mean, that's a difference between when I first started advertising, there was a radio ad, a print ad, a press ad, and a TV ad. I had five channels to worry about. Now I have endless channels.
Endless and new ones being added every day.
Every day, exactly. So that's the real difference. And that's a challenge for young creatives, I think. A real challenge for them. Because when we were working on briefs always, we would always challenge what the media was. But now the media is so specific on briefs a lot of the time, we need TikTok ads. It's like, well, is that your best option? Well, no, we've got to fill our TikTok channel up. Where before, if someone would say, we need a print ad, we would go, well, who is your target audience? Maybe a poster might be better on their way to work instead of in the Metro newspaper. Whatever, you could challenge it a bit more. Now I find that it's very hard to challenge a brief, especially the media part of it, because there's specific touch points that are very... So in my day, you came up with one idea, and if the idea was good enough and strong enough, it would be able to sit in every media without any problem. Now, the idea needs to be slightly different sometimes for certain channels. So yeah, I do feel sorry for young creatives sometimes now.
What can you not live without?
I could not live without my fiance and my little boy. Without a doubt. She's let me become who I am and opened me up and just freed me up to be who I want to be. And my little boy is just, yeah, he's a terror, but we love him.
That's always how it is. And then our final question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
On my scale, so can I say 3.14 recurring? Something like that, maybe. The never-ending weirdness, yeah. But a low scale. Take some risks and ask why. Every time in your business, if you're moving forward, you know, you've got to be moving forward and stop standing still. But to stop standing still, you've got to ask why. And take a few more risks. I think there's definitely too little companies taking risks at the moment. And what's the worst that could happen, you know, as Dr. Pepper said?
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.